Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Stargazing with Star Fuentes. Star Fuentes is a master intuitive healer and spiritual teacher and has been a pioneering student of metaphysics for over 50 years. She has learned lifetimes of priceless information from her years of seeking out and living with indigenous healers and shamans around the world. Visit her website at www.starfuentes.com and then join her here every Wednesday night on Spiritual Connections Radio as she shares her knowledge with you. And now, Star Fuentes.
Hi, this is Star. After the half hour, I will be taking questions. The number is 646-716-9663. And I was hoping to have a guest tonight. Jan Phillips, are you there? Okay. So, I want to chat to you tonight about a project that I have been working on lately. And one of the things that I have been working on lately is some advanced chakra work. And I remember when I first started learning chakras many years ago, and I studied the color of the chakra, I studied the sound of a chakra, I studied the Sanskrit names of a chakra. I studied many different things about a chakra. One of the things that I do remember studying is the petals on each chakra. Well, for years and years and years, I kept coming across the petals of a chakra, and I kind of knew what they were and how many there were there, and not what was really going on with it. And so, okay. Yeah.
Hey, Jan.
Yes.
Great. Hi, Jan. This is
Hi,
Star.
There.
Great. Welcome. And it's a pleasure to have you here tonight. You're a teacher, a leader. You have the Living Kindness Foundation. Could you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, please, or a lot about yourself?
I'll do it in spurts. How's that? I got my start in social activism from, I would say, my training in a Catholic high school, in a Catholic school where I developed a kind of belief that it was good to be a stand for justice and a stand for peace. I haven't maintained any of the religious accoutrement that my Catholic Church gave me, but I have maintained a dedication to those principles of making peace wherever I go. So most of my work, the books that I write, the things that I teach, the workshops that I facilitate are all related to us being more inspired kind of global citizens. And so the premise is always you have all the answers that you need to know you already have inside you. So the book that I'm working on right now is from a Rumi expression which says, stop learning, start knowing.
Wow,
and so my work,
profound.
Isn't it beautiful?
It's pretty so, profound expression. Now, do people really understand what the steps are between learning and knowing? Do you think they just say, oh, what a great quote? Or do you actually think that they inquire, do some inquiry into themselves about what does that mean?
I think it's a provocative quote. Which, at first, people, of course, would say, oh, my God, I love that. Let me write it down in the same place that they write down all their Rumi quotes. But I think because it is provocative and pretty meaty, it might encourage people to inquire within, to see, oh, my God, well, how do I do that? Because we've all kind of been grown up to think someone outside us has the answers, usually in the form of G-O-D, But all of our basic training is, you know, look outside yourself for the solutions. And I'm saying it's time for us to really harvest the wisdom from our life experiences, because every one of us has gone through many tragedies, and I think every tragedy is a teacher. And so if we can harvest our tragedies and transform them into creative works like stories or poems or novels or screenplays, then we're doing what we came here to do. We're true to our soul's mission, and then we know the bliss that we're here to know.
And why, for people, why is it so hard for them to understand that the learning and experience mixed together start creating wisdom? And many people just collect all these learnings or all these teachings and don't have these experiences, or many people have all these experiences and don't learn about them. What do you think goes on with that?
I think what happens is that, well, one, you look at the culture at large. Now, every one of us is exposed to 250 ads a day. So that's up into 5 million by the time you're 50, right? And every ad is designed to make you feel less than, you know, wrong, not the right age, not the right size, not the right psychology, in order so that you would buy the products. That's just the system that we live in, and no one's walking around carrying down with capitalism signs, but that is the system that we're part of, and that's how it works. So the economics have a lot to do with it. The economics actually run the programming that we receive on TV. It's about the ads, you know. It's not really about the... So anyway, we're pretty programmed to think we need everything that they're offering. You know, pills, cars, that school, not this school, that outfit, you know, it's better to be young than old, all those messages that we get. And most of us pretty much can figure out that they're designed to make us feel insecure, but a lot of us don't have any mentoring in that area, so we're subjects to that consumerist message. And so right off the bat, you feel like you're not creative enough. You know, you can't speak out, because women, especially in this society, are trained for silence. You know, that I heard Sheryl Sandberg on the radio. You know, she's the famous one from Google, I think, right, who wrote Lean In, that book that's all over the place right now. And she says, as women, you know, right from the get-go, if you are assertive in any way, you're called bossy. And men who are just assertive by design are never called bossy. That's a term that belongs to women who speak out about issues. So I'm not trying to sound like, you know, a big staunch feminist here. I'm just trying to say that it's part of our cultural inheritance that we don't feel good about ourselves, and that we don't feel powerful enough or authoritative enough or wise enough to speak out boldly about issues that are affecting our children, ourselves, and our grandchildren. So my training is to teach people the why-to of creativity, not the how-to, the understanding that it heals us.
That I think that is very essential and important to women and men also. You know, we're in a very dysfunctional society. I remember, I'm 75 years old, and at one point in time, I think in the early 60s, I went, bullshit, $4.99, that's $5. You know what
mm-hmm.
I mean? Don't,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then I went, bullshit, I don't need that. And then pretty soon is, bullshit, I don't even want this in my brain. And as I grew up and matured into what I hope to be a sophisticated woman, that I, through my own experience, I taught myself, I don't have to be skinny. I have to be kind. I have to be wise. I have to be able to inspire people to do their best, not inspire people to be like me, but
mm-hmm.
inspire people to be like themselves. And there's so many people out there that still think $4.99 is not $5, and there's so many people out there that because it's a fad, they have to get it, but do they really, really like it or need it? And I think when you get to a place where you realize that you're not doing your own thinking, there becomes an awkward awakening inside of yourself.
I agree with you.
And that awkward awakening is about you don't know who you are because you put what your mother wanted onto you, you put what the school wanted onto you, what your boyfriends, what the peers, the girls wanted onto you, you know? And an awkward awakening is probably one of the best things you can ever have.
Yeah.
I see.
Brava. Well said.
You're such a prolific writer there. I think I see many books. Talk to me about Divining the Body.
Divining the Body is a book I wrote shortly after I had a near fatal car accident, and I was in Death Valley, buried under a car muffler in August in the middle of summer, and I got third degree burns on my entire back. So I had undergone big, huge skin graft surgery, and for a month had to lie really still, and I was at great risk of infection, which happens after third-degree burns. And so I had to learn to talk to all my cells in every part of my body every day and communicate my love and my deepest desire to them. And so I would start with the bottom of my feet and end with the top of my head. And by the end of the, well, I don't know, probably 3 or 4 months of being pretty flat on my back, I'm healed. I'm well healed now, but I learned a lot in the process of how disembodied I was because I'm such a brainiac. I'm an intellectual who just loves intelligence and information, and I love transforming information into inspiration. So that's how come I wrote the book Divining the Body, because I had to divine my own body. And, you know, when you live in a country and you have a diviner come with his dowser to figure out where to put the well, that process is called divining. He brings a little stick, and it's a dowsing stick, and the water, and it moves when you're near the water. And the process is called divining. And so I thought it was kind of cool to do a double entendre with that word and use it for divining the body.
I think it sounds wonderful. I remember in the 60s and 70s, we'd go, heal, heal, okay, skin, heal. You know,
yeah.
And lately it's been, okay, cells, do you need a little bit more muscle, tissue cells? Do you need a little bit more energy? And in my particular circles of healing and stuff, I've watched people turn around from the 60s and 70s where they commanded their body, commanded with very strong affirmations instead of asking the body what it wants and then, you know, giving your body permission to your skin to take more permission or to have more water or to have more muscle cell tissue salt or whatever it needs to heal instead of, you know, standing over it with a bullwhip cracking heal, heal, heal.
Mm-hmm.
So that sounds like a very gentle, intuitive way to work with your body. I was in an ashram in India, and one of the things we had to do is lay still for 8 hours. And you couldn't blink. If you blink, you started over again. If you wiggled or made a sound, you started over again. And it was like complete torture to me. You know, my mind made up bullshit. It said, oh, there's a worm in your ear, and it's going to break your eardrum if you don't scratch now. And I was so amazed at what my brain, mind tried to tell me to get out of laying still. So I can imagine how difficult it was with these skin grafts to be still.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's an experience that all of us have to do. Do you do workshops? I see that you do several here. Can you tell us a little bit about them?
Yes, the workshops are multimedia experiences that use the arts to open up our heart so that our brain and our heart can reconnect, so that we're in our yin and our yang simultaneously. And when the two polar opposites connect, then there's a kind of creative combustion, just as there is with our batteries. You know, if your battery dies, you have to get those charging things out and put it on the positive pole and put it on the negative pole, and then sparks fly, because that's what happens when the opposites unite. And so it's a bit of a practice in non-dualism. It's saying black is not better than white, or north is not better than south, but the best thing is to figure out how to do is bring everything together that you formerly had an opposition to, and let them make love in a way. Let them just unite and proliferate and see what happens. And so the workshops are a series of like different creative exercises. We do storytelling. We do some writing. We inquire within and, you know, ask ourselves questions, share with partners, really probe the inner world, because that's really where the gold is. It's like going gold digging. So we enter the mind of ourselves. We have a good guide who takes us inside, and then we find the hidden treasures. And then when the workshop is over, we figure out how to share our treasures with the world at large.
That sounds wonderful. What has been your most potent spiritual experience this lifetime?
I think I had an experience when I was under the car, and I was not conscious, but I did. I had enough consciousness to say, don't be afraid, just try and see if there's a heaven, go there, and just see what happens. Let yourself go, don't be afraid. And so I had this perception of my soul weaving actually through the soles of my feet. I was lying face down on the ground under the muffler. So I felt this feeling of the spirit leaving my body. And it was almost completely out when I heard these men voices saying, is anybody there? Is anyone alive? And it was like, whoosh, right back in. So the soul reentered, and I said, I'm here. I'm alive. And they tried to find me. They said, where? I go, by the back tire, under the muffler. And so they came over, and I saw their feet and their legs. But they said to me, wait there. We'll go get help.
Wow.
And I said, you are the help. Just lift up the car. And they said, we can't, it's too heavy. I said, you are the help. Lift up the car. And then they lifted the car up and they dragged me out. Now, the poignancy of that is that all our lives we're told that help is somewhere else, that miracles are sourced somewhere else, that you go find somebody who's bigger and stronger than you, or you find God and you track that down. And very rarely do we experience ourselves at the moment as the healers that can raise Lazarus. So that moment for me, not because it was a near-death experience, I was already doing my life perfectly. But what it taught me was how deep the message is that you can't be a healer. You have to go somewhere else to get that power, and it's simply not true.
I think that's very, very important. And usually when I participate in a healing, the other person does it. You know, I can give you a map, but that doesn't mean I'm going to make your trip for you. You know what I mean? I can give you a little bitty map and say, wow, that's a great restaurant right around there. Why don't you eat there? And the healer, other people can give you a map, but really you have to do all that from your own sacred spaces, from your, you know, from your soul and heart and mind, and be creative about it. Jan, if my listeners want to get a hold of you, what is your website?
It's janphillips.com.
Well, that's pretty simple and pretty easy. So you talk about kindness and you talk about peace a lot. Talk to me about kindness. Tell us about kindness.
Oh, that's interesting, because the name of my foundation is Living Kindness. And I think that kindness is the thing that really is what heals us in the process of us manifesting kindness. That when we go out in the world with an intention to pass on goodness and healing energy, then that has to come from us. It has to go through our bones and through our sinews and through our skin in order to be the thing that we broadcast. And therefore, it is the most healing thing that we can do for ourselves, because what it is, the force, the energy field that we that surrounds us as we interact with the world is the same energy field that's within us. So kindness to others is really a kind of what they call, what's the word for it, self-centered enlightenment. There's some phrase like that, self-enlightened. Oh, enlightened self-interest, that's what it is. Enlightened self-interest. And it just means that you know giving is receiving, and that what you put out into the world is what you receive back from the world. So kindness isn't just a good idea. It's not just a virtuous act. It's a lifeline to our own well-being. That's what I have to say about kindness.
And what does your foundation do?
It does two things. One is the global thing. The whole reason I founded it was because I had an experience in Nigeria where I went to a village to see the kids in the school. And though I arrived in mid-afternoon, the kids were still standing in line outside in the burning heat waiting for the teacher to come, and she never came because the roads were just not navigable and she lived too far away. And they pulled me into the classroom and plopped themselves on the dirt floor and said, "Be my teacher, be my teacher." And I said to them, "What's 2 plus 2? And they all shout out, "4. I go, "Oh, my God, these kids already know. What's 8 plus 7? They say, "15. And I started crying. I felt so full of sorrow for that situation, that these kids in this village want to learn so bad that they dragged me into their little awful classroom. And I didn't know what to do. I just said, "I promise you I'm going to start getting you a teacher as soon as I get home." And so, and that was like 4 years ago. And right now the building is half completed. And the way that we complete it is by doing local work. And the local thing I do to raise money is I organize a symposium for women called Women's Voices, Women's Visions. And it's a 4-day, well, 3-day actually, Thursday through Sunday symposium, where it's focusing on creativity, leadership, and social change. So women pay money to go to it. The money goes to Nigeria. And even though they get value for themselves and say, "Wow, this was a great experience," they also are funding a global project in Nigeria.
That sounds awesome. And, you know, children are are just like sponges, and, you know, anything, sewing, cooking, you know, talking about anything to them, even if they don't understand the language,
yes.
You know, is amazing in third world countries how much the children will get out of it. And, you know, we go back to this place and time where, you know, the average third world person in a country like that makes $100 a year, and you spend that much at Starbucks, you know.
Mm-hmm.
When we think about those things consciously, we're like, oh, boy, you know. So thank you for having that foundation and that ability to recognize the needs of a teacher in a land where teachers are still respected, you know, for what they give and how they help raise the children.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think would really, really change the world if all of us, each one of us, one by one, started being that or doing that, besides kindness, because I know that's right up your alley. What do you think we need to be to have world peace?
Storytellers. I think that we pretty much withhold our stories from each other, and nobody's saying who they are from the inside out, and that causes us to feel lonely. And it causes people to not identify the other as the self. And the value of our lives are contained in our stories, anything that I've experienced. You know, I have an exercise where there's all these concentric circles on the page, little circles, bigger circles, bigger circles. And they fill in like 0 to 10, 11 to 20, 21 to 30, 31 to 40. And then we do a long guided meditation, and people plot out in those circles the events of their lives that they remember from ages 0 to 10 on up. So the only thing you're going to do during the course of a meditation is to remember the pivotal experience, the really, really great ones and the really, really awful ones. So people plot those down on their circles. And then through the process of the day, we realize this is like the table of contents for your memoir. These are the turning points that caused you to know what you know, and your knowing is important for not just you. Your knowing is important for your family. Your knowing is important for your community, your tribe, the world, whatever. And so to tell our stories after we've processed them, so we're not coming out like, oh, this terrible thing happened to me, I'm never going to forgive so-and-so. But we tell the story like it's a curse to blessing story and say, this thing happened to me, and now I know the blessing, and here it is. And the moral of the story is blah-de-blah, right? So it's called in my book, Mastering Your Ordeals.
Wow,
and
that's
sounds
really inspiring to yourself, to get your story. I do a process. I have a class called Core Flush, and the first week's from hell and the second week's from heaven. And we do a process where you have to stand up in front of the group and tell the story, but you cannot say I, me, or my, or mine. So I have to get up and say, Star was born in Detroit, this and this. So we take a step outside of ourselves to look at that. And people have a very, very, very difficult time getting to that objective place because of however they've clouded those subjective emotions. And people just end up in heaven once they can tell something, once they can share something, and once they find out that I'm not the only person in the room that this has happened to. And I think that's really important for women to hear that. So take a deep breath, and we're coming up to the half-hour break right now.
You're listening to Stargazing with Star Fuentes. Star Fuentes is a master intuitive healer and spiritual teacher and has been a pioneering student of metaphysics for over 50 years. She has learned lifetimes of priceless information from her years of seeking out and living with indigenous healers and shamans around the world. Visit her website at www.starfuentes.com and then join her here every Wednesday night on Spiritual Connections Radio as she shares her knowledge with you. Once again, Star Fuentes.
This is Star. We'll be taking your calls at 646-716-9663.
Okay, you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. Lynn, you're on.
Hi, Star. Hi, Jan. You're very interesting. I enjoy listening to you. I was wondering if you could give me some guidance in just whatever comes in that's right and best for me now to know.
Okay, Jan, do you want to handle this and then I'll talk after you?
Yeah, sure. The guidance that I would give you, Lynn, is to forgive it all. Just forgive it all. And I can promise you that if you make that effort, whatever it takes, you might need a therapist, you might need somebody to help you with it. But if you start the journey called the Journey of Forgiveness, at the end, you will see that there never was anything to forgive because you will have added hugely to your soul and your soul's knowing in its magnitude, in its expansiveness, will help you understand that it all happened for you, not to you.
And my guidance for you, beautiful Lynn, is stop asking yourself what to do next. Stop asking what comes next. And I want you to be. You know, you're a human being, be, and the answers will come from inside of you. Is that
okay.
appropriate for you tonight, Lynn?
I guess I'll find out tomorrow.
Okay. Remember, there is love in your heart and love for you everywhere where you will see it. Thank you, Lynn.
Thank you.
Okay. Helen, you're on.
Hi. I have the same question, so wondering if you can give me the same type of feedback.
Okay, Jan, go ahead. You can go first, and I'll follow.
Say what your question is again.
It was the same as the previous caller, you know.
No, I need to hear it in your words.
Okay, so my question is kind of what I need to know and understand right now based on everything that's kind of based on the swirling of different things that are going on in my life.
Helen, what you need to know and understand right now is that you are creating your life. And everything around you, for the most part, is a product of your thoughts and your words. That you create what's spinning in your field out of your intentions and your desires and what you're focusing on. So if you focus on what you want, you will begin to see what you desire. If you focus on what you're afraid of, you will see plenty of that. That's
well,
all.
Oh, my God, look at all that drama. And watching all that drama and participating in all that drama, find your peace. Find your serenity. That drama is a distraction from your light. It is a distraction from your soul's work. Stop being caught up in the drama. Do you have this?
I do. I think it's, I'm struggling with how to attain it, but I get it.
But stay away from the drama. That means somebody tells you something, you don't repeat it to somebody else. Somebody accuses you of something, you don't defend yourself. Stay away from the drama. You're bleeding light from drama, avoid it at all costs, and come to your own inner peace and your own serenity. Thank you. Meditate on our answers, please.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Stig, you're on.
First of all, hi. Before I ask my question, I saw a documentary about Africa called Tanzania. I always pronounce that name wrong. And the difference between the two wills of that country that were pro-education and people resisting education and sticking to traditions that were so anti-feminist made me so angry that I got up at the talkback and blasted the men of that country and the women who did not support the younger sisters in simply going to school by helping them with their chores. And they thought poverty was spirituality, and that's not true at all. In fact, a very rich white girl came back from that country and founded a charity within 6 months, greatly helping the people of that country. And she was a rich girl who did it. And was amazing to me. It's just people still confuse that. I felt really strongly about that.
So I have to ask you a question, Stig.
Yes.
What part of you doesn't support you? What made you so angry about your own education or lack of that you stood up there and you felt so much empathy for those people? What part in you was calling for peace at that moment?
The part of me, that's developed into really an excellent actor, and I'm not feeling any support anywhere for a career. It's amazing. The better I get, this is a belief we have to quash. The better I get, the less there seems to be something out there. And
Would you please ask Jan a question, sweetie?
Yes. Hi, Jan.
Is your name Steve or Stag?
Well, Stig is my nickname for my oldest, dearest friends, and Star calls me Stig. And the name I use professionally is Steve Ahrens.
Okay. Steve, okay.
What's your question?
Okay, what's missing? Or is there anything missing, or what do I need to do?
The only thing that's missing is you saying there's something missing. It's like the only thing keeping a person from being enlightened is their saying, I'm not enlightened. Right?
Yeah,
so,
I got it.
There was a German mystic, Meister Eckhart, who said, the process of enlightenment is a process of subtraction, not addition. So there's nothing that you need to add, but you could remove some of the voices in your head that say to you it's not unfolding perfectly. Because how it's unfolding for you right now is perfectly. And when you wake up tomorrow and say how you want your day to unfold, then you start it by seeing it and speaking it into reality. It's in your hands. You know, we're like dancing with an invisible partner, right? Some people call it fate or whatever. So there's certain elements that we cannot control, but we control way more than people give us credit for. And that's how we're creators. We're creative by default, and you create your experience with your words, your feelings, your intentions, and your thoughts. So I think if there's anything missing, it's your remembering that that's what's true.
Great.
I love you, sweetie.
Oh, I love you, Star. And Jen, you're great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, really.
Take care, you creator, you.
Mark, you're on the air. Hey, Jan, I just want to start by saying it's the work that you do is absolutely incredible. I think we need more role models like you on the planet to set an example like you do.
Thank you, Mark.
I'm going to ask a very strange question, or maybe even in this group, I'm sure no question would be strange. But about a week ago, I had a set of jewels held with light that started spinning around my head. And I was wondering if you could tell me what the significance of that is.
You experienced a set of jewels that had a lot of light spinning around your head?
Yeah, basically it looks like a crown of jewels that's held by light, and it's currently there now. It's been spinning there for about a week.
How do you know it's there?
I just sense it.
You sense it. So if you look in the mirror, do you see anything?
No, I don't see that way. I just know that it's there.
Does it touch your head?
No, it kind of spins right above the temple level.
So it's like a halo that's over the pictures of the saints.
Yeah, something like that, but it's made of different types of jewels of like green and red and held with light.
Well, you know what it feels like to me is that you're really living up there in the sixth and the seventh chakra, that's really activated at this point. So the activity and the energy around your head is a result of, you know, the spiritual practice or the spiritual discipline that you're paying attention to. So to me, if I had that sensation, I would think, oh, this is cool. And I would look at it like, oh, do more of whatever I'm doing if I like it. So if it's not cumbersome and if you don't feel like a weirdo and you like the feeling, I'd say, dedicate more time to your spiritual practice.
Well, yeah, thank you for that, Jan.
Okay.
I know that gems and minerals are like vitamins and supplements to our energetic body. So if you have a crown of gems that are circulating around you, I would tell you to absorb them. Because a gem is a piece of wisdom. A gem is very concentrated. They've been under earth pressure for thousands and thousands of years, and someone has faceted and polished it. So my guidance to you, and since you're a knower and you know it's there, or a feeler and you feel it's there, I would like for you to absorb them, because with them, they will bring energy and energetic experience. Now, you know, this is yourself talking to yourself. This isn't something an angel put there or anything. This is you putting this into your own conscious awareness to step up and be more, okay?
That's great. Thank you to both of you. I'm going to go screen a caller, so I will be back with somebody in a minute.
All right. Thank you. You know, I've always been so astounded to watch somebody put on a gem or a gemstone and their aura and energy lighten up, but they could put two or three different gemstones on and nothing happens. And it's really amazing how vibrationally that there are certain gemstones at that moment that plug us into the light. Have you ever noticed that?
I never noticed that, but now I'll start looking.
Well, you know, the Ayurvedic astrology, you know, recommends
you
wear certain gemstones that touch the skin. And I just find them truly amazing. I'm sure I teach two or three classes on gemstones and energy. There's so many things. You know, when you think about the earth, we think about the plants, the herbs, the light, the synthesis processes we have in plants, and the gemstones, and the oils, and there's so many things that enhance our energy.
Yes, there's help everywhere.
And sometimes all we have to do is to be still. Be still inside to get it. You know?
Mm-hmm.
I think one of my earlier mistakes in my life was by humbugging something because it was so simple. Oh, no, that's too simple. There's got to be a bigger solution to this. And through through the decades of practicing, I've learned that sometimes the energy is the simplest thing. Okay. So you're working on a new book?
Yep, I'm working on it. That's why I was a little late calling. I got into the zone.
I know. I've been in the zone before.
I just was in a timeless warp.
Isn't it amazing how 8-9 hours when you're doing something you love can seem like 10 minutes?
Mm-hmm.
And then when you're doing something you don't love, how 10 minutes can seem like 8 or 9 hours?
Yeah, totally.
Great. All right. So can you tell me what your website is, Jan?
My website is janphillips.com.
And where can I buy your books?
You can buy them there. You can buy them on Amazon. And my Living Kindness website is livingkindness.org. In case anybody's moved to see that or get information. And also the symposium for women that I do every year is Women's Voices, Women'sVisions.com. So I would suggest any woman who's listening who would like to be creatively inspired, she should go to that site and join us next June.
Is that an online symposium or in a
physical
No,
it's
life?
Living Color, Living Flesh.
And what city will it be in?
At Skidmore College in Saratoga Springs, New York.
Ah, that's a beautiful place up there. So let's talk a little bit about what I'm doing right now. Right now, I've been studying the chakras for God knows how many decades, and I always ended up memorizing how many petals there were. And so recently...
You ready?
I'm ready.
All right, Cassie, you're on.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. I'm a lot of things have been shifting physically around me with my home, and I was wondering what guidance, what is it that I most need to know in my life right now?
Go ahead, Jan.
Well, consider yourself as home number one and get that in order. Get that in order. Do your feng shui of yourself first and declutter your own private spots where you have any regrets or resentments. Get yourself all cleaned out like a spring cleaning. And maybe that could happen just with a good friend where you have dinner one night and you just say, okay, I'm going to lose all my regrets and resentments. Would you be willing to like be a witness to me letting them go? And that's all. You know, we need rituals like that. But then your house number two, that which is your home, that where your bed is, will begin to be able to be perceived as, you know, more of a vessel for the living of your life. And you will know what you need to remove and what you need to bring in order for that space to be sacred and stimulating for you. Because if, you know, we just can't live with clutter, but first our inner clutter and then our outer clutter. So I think it would be good for you to remove a lot of stuff, anything that's broken, anything that's not, you look at it and it doesn't stimulate you, give you good memories or make you feel confident. Any old stuff you can just throw out or take to Goodwill. That's what I say about you and your house.
Thank you.
If you look around you, everything that is around you is both in your heart and in your mind. And you said stuff is moving around your house. No, it is you moving through different energies beside your house. Maybe 4 years ago that was the perfect energetic place. And maybe right now you need to let go of a lot and move on. Did that help you?
Yes. Can you give me some clarity on what I need to let go of?
Can you ask a more specific question than that?
What is it that would be most beneficial for me? Where would it be most beneficial for me to start in letting go?
Have you forgiven everybody in your life for whatever wrongdoing they've done?
No, but
that's where you start.
Okay.
That's where you start. You just write a little list and say, I'm holding a grudge against this one for that, this one for that, and figure out, you know, if you don't have a spiritual practice, then start one. And give yourself at least 10 or 15 minutes a day in front of a candle where you just feel like you're hooking up to mind at large. Let yourself be like a radio receiver for intelligence, which is making its way towards you. And that intelligence will inform you and let you know your next steps. But I know the next steps are going to require you to forgive whoever you have not yet forgiven.
Okay. Thank you. Thank
you
very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.
You know, forgiveness is really, really important. And if you can remember your high school bullies or your childhood bully's name, then you haven't forgiven. You know what I mean? So forgiveness is an act, and it's an act of being. So please do your forgiveness work, people. It's very important. Is there anything else you'd like to say to us, Jan, before we leave this evening? Any words of wisdom you want to impart on us?
I just want to say, contrary to the message of, if you remember their name, that was a positive, and now I'm going to add a negative, so that we'll have two poles and be non-dualistic.
Right.
The other side of that story is you probably will remember their names because they had a big imprint and a big impact on your life. And so it's, don't feel that you have to forget who they are. What the point of the whole process is to be able to get to the step where you can bless them and thank them instead of wishing you never met them, because for some reason or another, just like you came into the family that you came into as a little baby, you experienced the bullies that you experienced because your soul was giving you opportunities to advance on its evolutionary journey. So don't feel that if you remember the name, it was Tom or it was Sarah or it was so-and-so, it doesn't mean anything. What you know in your soul is it's time to forgive.
Well, thank
Jan,
you. I'm ready for that other caller.
Okay, great. Okay, Anita, you're on.
Hello.
Hi, what's your name?
Anita.
And what would you like to ask us this evening?
I just wanted to know what you saw going on right now with someone I have feelings for and what you saw for the future with us.
Okay, Jan, do you want to handle that?
I didn't understand the questions. I'm sorry.
Oh.
I
just wanted to know what you saw going on right now with someone and with someone I have feelings for and what you saw.
You're involved right now with somebody you have feelings for?
Yeah, I don't even know if we're involved right now still. It seems like we're on a standstill. I don't really know what's going on. So I just wanted to know, kind of like, I don't know if this person even still has feelings for me. And I just wanted to know what you saw going on right now and what you see for us for the future.
Well, I'm not the seer, but I will tell you what I think is good for you to know, that your future is hugely going to depend on your commitment in the matter. And your desire is the only thing you have to figure out right now. It's not about what's true for the other person. The question is, what's true for you? Does this relationship make you feel good? Are you empowered by it? Do you feel fully heard? Do you have your voice? And if those things are all positive, then you might begin the work of eliciting that information or more information from the person that you have feelings for. But you have to trust your own intuition here to discern whether you feel good enough to pursue the relationship, because it's going to live or die based on if you feed it or water it.
Do you see that?
Do you want to feed and water that relationship?
I wanted to get back to the positive. I do still want this person. I believe we have a lot of positive between us, but you're saying that it's all going to be dependent on me?
Wow. No, but it's dependent on you to initiate the dialogue that's about its life. You have to say to your partner, "Beloved, we must talk now at this stage because I need to hear from you." And you must, if he or she is a silent person and that's not doesn't come naturally, you have to keep eliciting the feelings and the thoughts from the deep down of the person that you care about. And if you need to be a mentor to them in how to speak to you, that you need to do that, because every relationship needs the input from the two parties at equal levels.
I was kind of giving him a space right now because I got the feeling that he's kind of going through something.
That's all guesswork. I mean, why don't you just call him or go to his place and say, "Are you going through something? Do you want some space?"
I called twice last week, this Sunday and past last Wednesday, and he didn't pick up. I left a message. He hasn't responded.
Okay. Twice. This is Star's place now.
Okay. The thing I'm hearing really loud from one of my spirit guides is that one of you wants to be right. It's more important to be right than to be in love. And that is something that instantly needs to be healed. Do you understand that when somebody wants to be right instead of wants to be loved?
Yeah, I don't know which one.
Well, is it you being right, or it really doesn't matter. But the energy is going, instead of being put into the loving part of the relationship, it's being put into one of you being right. And, you know, you could drive anything away or to you depending on how you handle it with your heart and how you handle it with your thoughts. So pay attention. Pay attention. When there is love, everything works out. Everything works out. And when there is the need to be right, there's work to be done. Okay?
Yeah, I don't think that that's me that's trying to be right.
Well, it's just...
No, I don't get that sense either.
It's not you trying to be right.
I think you're teetering, just wondering, not knowing what your next move should be. And I think what Star's saying is you can trust your instincts. Just follow the love trail. Do what feels like the most natural and loving thing to do. And if you're not received, there's your message.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you. People, you can get a hold of Jan at www.janphillips.com. I've got some new and wonderful material on MasterYourLight.com. My next upcoming class, video class next week, is talking about the energies of the petals of the chakra, what happens if your chakra petal is folded, split, gone, and how we're going to work with these energies. That's www.masteryourlight.com. I will be here every Wednesday. Thank you.
On behalf of Spiritual Connections Radio, thank you for listening to Stargazing with Star Fuentes. Please join us again next week for another enlivening episode. For more information on Star's classes or services, visit her website at www.starfuentes.com or call the office at 501-609-0660. That's 501-609-0660.